yourself before I forget. So, and then we're going to get an update from Garfo's staff.
Hello, everyone. My name is Deirdre Bolke. I'm on the council staff. It's been about 20 years. I've worked on a few different plans over that time. Bouncing around, I was first hired as the NEPA expert for the council office right out of grad school. So that is what it is. Moved on to a couple other things since then. And for about 10 years was the staffer for the Scallop Plan. And for the last five or so, I've been the lead staff for the Atlantic Herring Plan. This year, I'm also the staff for the SSC. And I have had a little time to work on a few other projects for the council this year, the climate change scenario planning initiative that we're involved in, and also some different CCC and NRCC working groups. So that's been interesting work. I do not have a presentation today on Atlantic Herring. You'll hear from me at future meetings. So I think the regional office is ready to go for an update on the industry-funded monitoring program that's been in place for the Atlantic Herring fishery for a little bit. So that's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bolke. So we have Sarah Weeks and Carrie Nordine. Are you ladies ready to go?
Can you hear me? This is Carrie.
I can hear you fine.
Can you hear me? This is Sarah.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay. Let it rip.
Right. I think we're ready then. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to update the council on the status of industry-funded monitoring in the Atlantic herring fishery. My name is Carrie Nordine. I work in the Sustainable Fisheries Division at the Greater Atlantic Regional Fisheries Office, and I'm joined by Sarah Weeks. Sarah works at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. So we'll be providing you with a brief update of IFM in the herring fishery for 2021, as well as an IFM outlook for 2022. Next slide, please. So to begin, I'll outline a few IFM milestones. In February 2020, we published the final rule for the New England IFM Omnibus Amendment. In April 2020, the herring fishery began entering trips into the pre-trip notification system, otherwise known as PTNS, to be considered for monitoring coverage. Issues associated with COVID-19 delayed the start of herring IFM until July 2021. As a note, the herring IFM year and SVRM year are the same, April 1st to March 31st. For herring IFM year 2021, four service providers were approved to provide coverage, and six midwater trawl vessels participated in the electronic monitoring, portside sampling, exempted fishing permit, or EFP. For herring IFM year 2022, that started on April 1st, four service providers have been approved, and so far, four midwater trawl vessels are participating in EFP. And lastly, Saltwater is the EM service provider for IFM years 2021 and 2022. And now I'll turn it over to Sarah.
Next slide, please. Thank you. Hello, good afternoon. This is Sarah Weeks. I work for the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. I will run through the next couple of slides and then hand it back to Carrie. Under the IFM amendment, the selection process for vessels became more complicated than the original or traditional system could handle. The requirement to notify via the pre-trip notification system, which has traditionally been used since 2010 for the Northeast groundfish fishery, went into effect in April of 2020. Since then, the industry has logged over 1,400 notifications. The use of this system for herring is new and definitely required more action on the part of the industry. The compliance with the notification requirements has been very high. Use of this system allows for better selection and assignment and provides for providers to accept trips toward the 50% target coverage rate, which is a combination of SVRM and IFM coverage. In 2021, most of the SBRM CDAs were achieved in light of the challenges of redeployment after the pandemic. 58 out of the 69 allocated CDAs were achieved, and those not achieved were due to lack of effort. TRIPS are entered by vessel owners or operators or fleet managers. The PT&S system selects and assigns SBRM coverage. If not selected for SBRM, a TRIP or a notification may be selected for IFM. SBRM days must be achieved, though, before the IFM coverage begins for a particular TRIP. Next slide, please. Although most of the SBRM coverage was achieved in 2021, the IFM coverage toward the 50% target was not achieved. Under the IFM amendment, Category A and B permitted vessels could either select carrying a human at sea monitor, or they could join the EFP, which provides a combination of electronic monitoring, or EM, and portside sampling. So there were 43 TRIPS selected for at sea monitoring coverage over 2021, that's July 1st through the end of the SBRM year, which is March 31st, 2022. Four of the six trips were not covered because the provider did not have an observer available, and two of the trips canceled. For vessels that are on the EFP, there were 46 portside sampling offloads that were selected. 8 offloads were accepted by the providers. 3 offloads were not sampled due to lack of available samplers, and 4 trips were canceled. That left us with 1 portside sampled offload. The 1 offload that was sampled was reimbursed. The industry is reimbursed 50% of the cost of sampling. At the end of the funding timeframe, and we'll talk about funding in a future slide, we do plan to reevaluate leftover funds that we have set aside for the industry and go back and distribute them equally to each owner or operator that had been charged for services throughout 2021. Next slide, please. There were 28 declared herring trips by EFP vessels. All of them have recorded video. Only 18 of the trips had fishing activity, and those 18 are being reviewed. To date, 15 are through a preliminary review by Saltwater, the EM contractor, and 11 have undergone a secondary review by the Northeast Fisheries Science Center EM team. At this point, we have no preliminary findings available. We're still in the process of understanding and identifying all of the video. Next slide. There have been many challenges to implementation of what essentially is a new program during a global pandemic, many of which I'm sure you can understand. First, of course, there was a waiver for all observer coverage. The waiver ended formally in June of 2021. IFM began the implementation of IFM. The monitoring component began on July 1st, 2021. Over the next several months, observers, providers were all affected by COVID testing, COVID positive cases, all of which limited deployments. Many observers exited the program, generally due to COVID and other reasons, of course. Over the course of 2021, the observer program redeveloped a plan, redeployment plans, and worked closely with all the providers to support the observers as they tried to make their way back to the docks and the vessels in a new normal situation. But due to the lack of observers across all fisheries, the coverage really had to be prioritized, SBRM being our first line of priority, IFM being our last priority. The observer program's training program really had to be redefined and turned into what was an in-person 3-week training to a hybrid or remote model, or completely remote model. And competition for training space on our schedule began. Limitations to training observers was a very real thing in 2020 and 2021. Most of our staff, including myself, were not traveling. We're not able to conduct any in-person outreach, really to support IFM going forward. And some details, 36 observers cross-trained for IFM between 2020 and 2022. 17 of those observers have since exited the program, have left the program. About 5 are eligible to observe trips currently, and the rest are not yet certified. And certifications are expiring due to difficulty maintaining certifications in a low-effort fishery, basically meaning if observers don't get out to sea and test their skills in a certain amount of time, they'll lose or expire their certifications and have to go back through the trainings. So those are some challenges that we've been dealing with. For port side sampling, 7 observers have cross-trained, 3 have exited or left the program, 4 are left or eligible to observe offloads, and none are certified yet. In addition, there are deployment challenges, especially in the implementation of a brand new port side sampling program, federal program. Some providers found it difficult to keep observers on standby, potentially missing other trips as they need, basically as they need to stay employed, while waiting to understand offload locations, timing, and amounts to be offloaded, and how and when to get portside samplers to the right locations. So difficulty coordinating and communicating with vessels, as this was new to vessels and new to providers, trying to organize deployments. Next slide, please. IFM in 2022 began, as Carrie mentioned, on April 1st. In 2022, we're continuing with IFM selection at the 50% target, and we'll train a new class of observers in June prior to the opening of Area 1A. We hope to have people certified more quickly this year. And in addition, we're planning to send several staff members from our office to monitor offloads to provide more flexibility and enable us to collect more data to really start to understand some of the challenges with the program and the data collection side of things, as we've really only observed one offload. We expect to have funds to administer IFM at the 50% target for 2022. We also have some funds to offset industry's costs left over from last year that can be used to reimburse the industry for at-sea monitoring and for portside sampling and to continue to improve the infrastructure and the safety of the offload sites. These funds do expire in September of 2022, so it is our goal to use them up before the end of September. Next slide, please. And I'm going to hand it back to Carrie. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. So in closing, we'd like to share with you opportunities to reconsider Herring IFM. The first is an opportunity to reconsider the IFM coverage target. So 2 years after implementation, Council will examine the result of any increased coverage in the herring fishery and consider if adjustments to the IFM coverage target are warranted. IFM was implemented in July 2021, so 2 years would be July 2023. The IFM coverage target may be revised in a framework or amendment. Next slide, please. There's also an opportunity to reconsider IFM prioritization process and weighting approach. So the prioritization process prioritizes available federal funding to cover NIMS cost responsibilities associated with administering IFM. The process is considered when federal funding is not sufficient to support the Council's IFM coverage targets above SBRM coverage. The current IFM prioritization process is a discretionary Council-led process. This means the Council applies a weighting approach to recommend how to prioritize available federal funding across IFM programs. So Herring is currently the only IFM program using this process. IFM programs for scallops and groundfish were established differently and are not part of this prioritization process. Changes to the prioritization process may be made in a framework or amendment. The current IFM weighting approach is an equal weighting approach, meaning that available federal funding is allocated equally across IFM programs. Changes to the weighting approach may be made in a notice or rulemaking following a public meeting, in a framework or amendment. Changes to the weighting approach are made on an as-needed basis. Whenever new IFM programs are approved or existing IFM programs are adjusted or terminated. Next slide, please. So thank you. That concludes our presentation, and we'll do our best to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Weeks and Ms. Nardine. Is there any questions or comments from council members on the presentation? Ms. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who I would ask this question, but one of the two ladies. Under slide three, you've got Mid-Atlantic Midwater Trawl. You had 13 days assigned, no sea days completed. And this, I presume, has to do with through February of 2022?
Correct. So zero sea days achieved. There was an effort, basically, that was identified in a system for Mid-Atlantic Midwater Trawl.
I believe she said there was no effort in that fishery.
Okay, thanks. I guess my concern is the same amount of sea days going to occur for this fishing year? I think we're worried about not capturing Mid-Atlantic trawl, midwater trawl work in regards to bycatch species.
Can you guys hear me? This is Sarah.
Yes.
Okay. If there are midwater vessels that notify out of a Mid-Atlantic port in the PTNS system, we will have 13 sea days for the SBRM 2022 year, and we will select those vessels if they notify to achieve the 13 days. But if there are no notifications because of lack of effort, then of course we won't be able to get the coverage.
Thank you.
Next, I have Mr. Salerno, then Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the presentation, Carrie and Sarah. I do have a couple questions. The first question is about the number of participants in year one versus year two, or 2021 versus 2022, with the six midwater trawl vessels participating in the EFP down to four this year. Did those two vessels that are not participating give any specific reasons why they're not, or it's just they didn't re-up? Or just curious if you have any information on the two that left, or
I can probably take that. The two vessels that are no longer participating in the EFP, I believe, are no longer herring fishing. And as you know, many of these vessels have diversified due to the limited quota over the past several years. So I believe they just didn't think that they would participate enough in the herring fishery to participate in the EFP.
Okay, that makes sense. I just wanted to confirm that, you know, they weren't, the concerns is basically they left the fishery, not they weren't happy working under the EFP, and I'm okay with that. My next question goes to on slide blah blah the outlook about the costs on slide seven, where you say that NIMS expects to have sufficient funding to administer the 50% coverage target. I assume you're referring to NIMS's administering, like the shoreside component, you guys in the office?
Yes, that's correct. The 50% coverage target and supporting the shoreside NIMS infrastructure costs for 2022. Yes.
Okay, cool. And I guess the under the industry cost, you say that funding expires in September 2022. So theoretically, if there are any trips that occur after September or whatever the time frame is, that those trips would not be reimbursed under the current structure?
Correct. Correct. We don't, the funds expire in September of 2022. We do not have a backup plan. These funds have been extended several times due to the pandemic and the inability to actually spend them because we had no effort. So they cannot be renewed or they can't continue past September of 2022.
Okay, cool. And obviously I understand that. I'm just curious, hopefully we're getting out of the COVID world and, you know, we're getting back into more current practices. Do you have an anticipation of the amount of trips this may or may not affect? Just looking at how much of the effort would you say occurs in the latter half of the fishing year that may fall under that expiration date?
I don't have that, Dan, offhand. We can certainly look into it and get back to the council.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I guess not to belabor, it seems to me that this may push a lot more effort at the beginning of the year and result in not a stable supply to whatever markets, well, the bait and food, whatever markets, it may contract supply issues. So I'm just curious to see if there, I'm just trying to get a better understanding of how this would interact with the industry moving forward. But thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Mr. Smith and Ms. Eitri.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions. I'll try to be succinct here. I think my questions would probably be for Sarah because she covered this information. The first one on slide 4, it details a number of trips that were selected for IFM coverage and then the number of trips accepted by the service provider, and there were about 40 in each category selected for IFM and 6 or 8 that were accepted by the service provider. And I'm curious, what is it that, what determines whether a service provider accepts a trip or not?
That's a good question for service providers, but I can say it'll depend on if they have an observer available at the time, if they know where and when the offload or the trip will take place. Much of that they can get from the pre-trip notification system. So it's really due to observer availability.
Okay, thank you. And on the EM side of it, that would be for portside sampler availability?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. And then on the EM EFP, I'm curious, it says that the target coverage rate is 50%, and I'm just curious on the EM trips, are they running the cameras on all the trips and just doing video review on 50% of them, or just turning the cameras on 50% of the trips?
The cameras are run on 100% of the declared herring trips. And right now, because this program is still new, we are looking at all of the trips. But in the regulations, there's a 50% coverage rate, a review rate, excuse me. But we do have funding to cover this, so we are looking at all the trips just to learn more about the process, the protocols, the placement of the cameras, the efficiency of the systems, as we develop a better understanding of the program.
Okay, thanks. And one more related to that on slide 5, it looks like you've had 15 of those EM trips reviewed, with 11 of them being reviewed twice, it looks like. And I was surprised you said that there haven't been any results from those trips that were taken in 2021. And there's, I think you said, challenges understanding the video. Can you talk a little bit more about what those challenges are and when data or information from those EM trips might be available?
Sure. Sorry, I must have misspoke. We have video from all of the 28 declared herring trips that have occurred under the EFP vessels, the 6 vessels that are on the EFP, that were on the EFP for 2021. The trips that are eligible for review, those that have fishing activity, there are 18 of them. Those have been identified and 15 of them have already gone through a primary review. So that data does all exist at the Science Center. The Science Center then took 11 of those trips that so far has finished a secondary review. So there are data, there are results. I didn't have any preliminary results to share with you today.
Okay, but you have been, okay, it sounds like there is information coming from them, just not anything to share. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Ms. Etree, then Ms. Ware.
Thank you. I have a couple questions, if it's okay. The first one has to go with the lack of observers and the training courses that you have planned for June. Just timing-wise, how much time between that June training class and the opening of Area 1A will they'll, like I know in the groundfish fishery, we need to have training trips for certification. So when the fishery is opening, if your target is 1A, how many monitors do you think will be completely trained with training trips and certified, or are there no training trips in this training class?
The training is in June, and this is a cross-training, Libby. So these are certified NEFOP or IFS, industry-funded scallop observers.
Okay.
Because this is a high-volume training, that's always been an advanced training. That's how it was designed and developed. I do not know when the Area 1A opens. Last year it opened July 15th. I'm not sure if it'll be the same this year. I think there's a meeting later this month to determine that. So we will have some time before they're out in the field before the opening. And then our hope is to get them trained and certified as quickly as possible this year, because there will be, I believe there will be effort in the Area 1A fishery.
Okay, thank you. It's hard to keep track of all the trainings. I'm sorry. And then my other question, and I think this goes to some of the correspondence regarding weighting and how we weigh the current prioritization process and whatnot. Just, has there been any type of statistical analysis completed for how many observations within these various, be it at sea and port side, and even within the EM program, that you have to collect in order to have enough data to start analyzing? Like, is there a target number that you're shooting for to generate a high level of data for this analysis that we're supposed to be able to review? Or have you not really concluded what level of observations you need to have a data robust analysis?
Harry, would you like to take that one? I have not done an analysis such as that, Libby, but I'm not sure what Carrie's thoughts are.
So I think because the program has been new, we haven't set sort of a minimum amount of coverage necessary to meet our goals. We're still sort of in the exploratory process. The data Sarah showed are preliminary. We're still working within GARFO to look at what the realized coverage level was for 2021. I think those conversations will be evolving as we start getting realized coverage level data and sort of looking ahead to future years. So I would say that those conversations are ongoing and we don't have an answer for you yet.
Okay, and then if I may, just one additional follow-up. From when the IFM amendment was discussed and developed, and I realized the herring fishery is the only fishery that falls under the IFM amendment, and where the fishery is today, I mean, it's a fair conclusion that the fishing behavior of today is not reflective of the fishing behavior of the past, and ideally not reflective of the fishing behavior of the future. So to that data that you're collecting, will it be valuable? It doesn't seem like it can be valuable to a comparison in the past, but would it be valuable for a comparison in the future for what we do with this program moving forward, if our hope is that the fishery would be much, have a higher activity in the future with a higher attack for the herring fishery? Or would that be part of the analysis that hasn't happened yet?
I think that would be part of this ongoing consideration. I think you're definitely correct. When we were setting this up, we weren't envisioning a fishery that's operating like this. Sort of a perfect storm of conditions came together when we implemented IFM. I think the data we're getting for this period is of interest and will be of value, but how we use that moving forward and what how it's projected or used for a fishery that returns to maybe more normal levels. Really think that is still part of an ongoing conversation.
Okay, great, thanks. I just think we all need to be managing expectations, and I think your presentation, both presentations made that clear about the difference, but I just wanted to see if there's any internal work. Thanks.
Ms. Ware, then Mr. Alexander.
Thank you. I have two questions. My first is just a clarification on the funds that expire September 2022. Are those funds just to cover industry costs associated with monitoring, or is that also covering shoreside NIMS costs such that in September 2022, NIMS would no longer have their or funding for their portion of this?
Thank you for the question. Good question. Those funds are with ASMFC, as you know, and they are only to cover the industry's costs. So the industry's costs for at-sea monitoring, portside sampling, and then in addition, the safe sampling stations. We had funding to upgrade the stations to make them more safety compliant and safer for portside samplers. So it is only for the industry's side of the cost, not for the NIMS's infrastructure or shoreside costs.
Okay, thank you. And then I think my second question would be for Carrie about the prioritization. Does a discussion on prioritization only happen if NIMS doesn't have enough funding for the 50% coverage level, or can that discussion happen even if NIMS does have adequate funding?
Thank you. So for the prioritization process, that is intended when we have insufficient funds to cover cost responsibilities for administering the program. That said, the weighting approach is an aspect of the prioritization process, but I believe it has a little more flexibility in when you'd use it. And so currently, equal weighting approach, and both the amendment and the final rule talk about that changes to the weighting approach are made on an as-needed basis when a new IFM program is approved or an existing IFM program is adjusted or terminated. So I think, you know, within that existing IFM program being adjusted, there is some flexibility to make changes that is not funding dependent.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Pentney, do you want to add some clarity here as well?
Yeah, just thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just to build on what Carrie's response was, I think it's helpful for, because there's been a lot of council member turnover since we did all this. But the original intent behind this, where we structured this with a prioritization process and a potential waiting scheme, was this was originally intended to be a joint action between two councils, the Mid-Atlantic and New England Council, potentially each with their own IFM programs competing for a limited pool of federal funds. So one could think through, you know, an example might be if the Mid-Atlantic had, for example, established an IFM program for its tilefish fishery, and New England Council had established one for herring and maybe the skate fishery, and you'd run the math for what the optimal coverage might be, and you'd need $5 million, and the agency has $2 million. Well, how do we allocate that across the three fisheries? And so that's where the prioritization process would come in. And the weighting system would be, as Carrie said, the initial weighting was equal, right? A third, a third, a third, if there's three fisheries. But maybe the two councils get together and decide it's really important. So they want to put 50% of the available funds towards the herring fishery and then split the remaining funds among the other two fisheries. That's where the weighting system could have come into play. But as Carrie has said, we only have one IFM program that's subject to the prioritization and the weighting scheme, so they're kind of irrelevant.
Ms. Ware?
Thank you, that's very helpful.
Okay, I have Mr. Alexander, and then I see no more hands from the council, so I'm gonna go to the public after Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Sarah and Carrie. On the table in slide three, there's Mid-Atlantic and New England identified there. Where's the dividing line for that? Is the Mid-Atlantic area two and in New England, everything else?
In the SBRM amendment, the Mid-Atlantic is Connecticut South.
Okay, thank you. Also, I have heard third hand, admittedly, that there's been some trips to Area 2 since the court overturned the exclusion zones. And based on an answer you gave to a question earlier, it sounded like none of those trips had carried observers. Is that correct?
Okay. It's possible that those trips might fall into the New England Midwater Trawl coverage, the SBRM coverage that you see on the screen now, the 30 days that were achieved. But I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to look at specific trips to Area 2, I guess.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, no hands from the council. Anyone from the public have any questions or comments? Ms. Tooley. Mary Beth, you must be muted. There you go.
I'm unmuted. Dead silence. I thought I'd lost you, but thank you very much. I guess I appreciate the questions from council members on this topic, and I would refer you to your binder, the correspondence from the industry on this agenda item. And, you know, in that correspondence, it does make a reference to the 2022 observer year, monitoring year. And my impression when that correspondence was put together is that we had the 2022 reimbursement, and since learned after that, that's not the case. And clearly that's what was related to you today. So I have concerns about both 22 and 23. It's very clear that, you know, this fishery as a whole is not going to be profitable. It is all a negative scenario. It's also clear that, you know, the program is not feasible for the agency to administer. The providers, the logistics there are extremely difficult and hard to manage. And for, you know, for the industry to have to pay for, you know, trips that are not going to break even, you know, for the end of the year. And people probably wonder, well, why would you consider going? Well, I think, as most people know, letting a boat sit for 2 years in a row is not a good idea. So that's one motivation to go. Another is that it's an opportunity to provide a paycheck to some crew and allow us as a company to maintain a relationship with them. And those are things that are very important to us. And I think that, you know, if you have 22 to 22 trips that are selected, the majority of those are going to be primarily, if not all, will be on purse seine trips, which we have plans to go purse seining. So I don't make my comments, that it's bad to just cover purse seine and because we're not going to do it. But in this particular case, I'm not sure how that adds to the data. And it seems like the motivation was more on information on midwater trawls than purse seine. Personally, I think it should be equal, but in this case, it won't be equal. I just don't think the program is functioning as you all envisioned or we envisioned either. We are, both of our vessels are part of the EFP. We were the one trip that was selected, and we will continue to support the program going forward. But in the short term here, this is likely the only fishery you have in New England where there is zero profit, and actually the economics are all negative. So I'd like you to take that into consideration and think about 22 and 23. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Tooley, for your comments. And we do have your correspondence, and we will refer that to the committee, if that helps you. Mr. Kalin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the council, Jeff Kalin with Lunds Fisheries, Cape May, New Jersey. You know, we're not going. There just isn't enough fish to go. you know, relative to the midwater trawl trips that didn't occur. I mean, we went in the yard. We have other permits. There's no fishery, and there are, you know, way too many platforms, you know, to divvy up such a small quota. So we're just simply not going. And I think, you know, over the months leading up to this, we also agreed with the EFP. We went along with it. We have no problem with it, other than we don't like paying for it, but that's a whole other matter. But the reason why there weren't any trips is we're just not going. And I think where we are now, this is a bigger problem for the National Marine Fisheries Service than it is for those of us who own and operate midwater trawlers that fortunately have other permits on them. So, you know, when I'm an advisor, I've been an advisor for a long time and was a council member. And, you know, we ask as advisors that the program be set aside until the stocks rebuild, because in the meantime, you've got an agency with a lot of requirements, and a lot of other priorities, and a whole lot of regulation around a fishery that simply doesn't exist anymore. So we appreciate your consideration of the letter that we sent, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I really think that the right option right now is to set the program aside for herring until the stocks rebuild, because you know, we're just right now we can't afford to go fishing. We've got to do something else. Mackerel, of course, you heard about it this morning. You know, there's no RSA. There's no point in going after mackerel on these boats and using herring as an incidental catch in the mackerel fishery, for example, which we did try to do the last couple winters. But there's no fishery. The problem really is a big problem for the agency, and we do appreciate our continued collaboration with them and with the council in this fishery. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kalin. Anybody else from the public? Seeing none. Any other comments from the council? Ms. Etree.
Thank you. I take those comments very sincerely. I have a profound appreciation for folks trying to navigate the cost of monitoring. And also complete realization of where the herring fishery is at this point. Where I'm struggling is I saw the letter with the waiting request, and I struggled a little bit there because I could recall that the herring fishery was the only fishery currently in IFM, so I wasn't sure how we changed waiting. One quick question, and I think it's somewhere in the presentation, I just forgot. What was the previous reimbursement of industry costs? Was that 100% or was that still 50%?
For 2021, we had implemented a 50% reimbursement rate. And at the end of towards September, when we know the funds are expiring, we'll look back on how much we have left over. So it's possible that we'll be able to reimburse all of the vessel owners or operators at 100%, but we just aren't sure yet.
Thank you for that. And my other question, because there's nothing, I was on the council during the IFM amendment, and trust me, in that discussion, unforeseen, talk going down, COVID, fishery shutdown, everything that, like, this was not part of the discussion during IFM. And so, I think it's on the council to seriously evaluate what we thought we were doing in the IFM amendment and what is currently happening with the reality of this fishery and just the reality of the impacts with COVID. And so my question to the chair is, you referenced a herring committee. Is a herring committee scheduled to talk about this, or will one be scheduled to talk about it where we could have an additional conversation and thoughts about potential solutions at the next council meeting? This was framed as an update, so I'm just trying to think through if there's some meetings coming up where we can kind of try to dig through this new information that we got and thinking through about what kind of value we think we're going to get out of this program and what might make sense moving forward in light of what the fishery is facing.
Yeah, Libby, right now the committee is not not tasked already for this. There's not a committee meeting scheduled that I know of. And this is not part of our priorities, but Deirdre maybe can give you a better answer than that. Hold on.
Sure. I think you just kind of hit it there at the end. We do have a poll out for the Herring Committee to try to schedule a meeting before the June council meeting. This is not on the agenda currently. There are other things that we had on there, and it's pretty limited, honestly, in the dates that are available with other committee meetings. But to the point of this topic, this is not currently a 2022 Herring priority in terms of things that we were going to work on this year. We were hoping the specification package in particular this year would be very streamlined. We might even not have to do an environmental assessment, for example. So, you know, that's our main action this year, as well as the spawning, kind of picking up on the spawning action. So it's kind of an issue of timing at the meeting, but also just not a priority currently for this calendar year.
Attorney McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sort of building on what Deirdre was saying and what Mr. Pentany discussed earlier, if the council is going to embark on an effort to reevaluate the program and then ultimately change the nature of it, you know, potentially zeroing it out, the proper vehicle for that would be a framework adjustment action. So I just wanted to make that noted.
Thank you, Mitch. Ms. Etri?
Thank you. I appreciate, even if it came to changing priorities, that would have to originate at the committee level. I'm struggling with what a solution is right now, but I just want to go on record of expressing my severe concern about what we are doing in positioning this fishery to, I'm going to use the word suffer through in the months and year coming up. And I would hope that there could be some thoughts and discussions and maybe some solutions and willingness of the Herring Committee with priorities. I don't know what the solution is, but I think that just staying silent and acting like this isn't potentially an issue that we should be thinking about is equally problematic for me. I just have not come up with what the solution would be at this point in time. That's it for me. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Libby. Ms. Ware?
Yeah, I mean, like Libby, I'm struggling with what the solution is here. I get that this isn't a priority for this year and that creates some challenges, but I would hope if time allows that whatever a future Herring Committee is, that there might be at least a few minutes for a brief discussion. I don't think this should just kind of go by the wayside until 2023. I don't know what that discussion includes because I'm not sure what a solution is, but I would at least hope there could be a few minutes of discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ware. Anybody else from the council? Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Weeks and Ms. Nordine. I think we're done with this topic, which brings us to the end of our agenda. And I'll ask one more time.